Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of June 6th. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. Good evening, man. How's it going?
It's going well. It's been a really interesting week. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. That's all I can say, man.
not by your fingernails, I hope.
Getting ready for the rainy season. So this is the time of year when I'm not as happy as usual because I can't enjoy the great outdoors as much.
Unless your idea of enjoying the great outdoors is being damp and humid and sometimes chilly and sometimes warm and uncomfortable.
Yeah, sorry, Neil Sedaka, I don't feel laughter in the rain.
Good one.
All right, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Ernesto Mejia of the Cebu Lions, and we're going to talk about Cebu, interleague play, and more. And we have some great listener questions, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Laughter in the rain, baby.
All right. Yeah, that's an oldie, but an oldie.
I'm oldie oldies.
So I pulled Ernesto Mejia aside on Wednesday at Cebu Prince Dome and talked to the slugger, and he's making another appearance on JBW. Now, I don't remember how many or what number this is. I think it's three because I've talked to him twice, and I think you talked to him once.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to count because...
Stop trying to keep track, John, is what he's saying.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I talk to people, I say a bunch of times.
A bunch of times. All right. Well, we'll stick with that then. That sounds great.
Okay.
Now, he's been with the Lions for 3 years, and he came after joining the team in 2014, basically after the season started, but pretty close to the start.
He got the little bit of the Haruki Ihara experience.
Just a little bit. Just a taste.
Just a taste. Well, that's, you know. That,
a bitter
that,
taste.
That, a little taste goes a long way with him. and you know I do like him. You know I do like him.
I know
him.
You do. I know you do. So Ernesto tore it up. He had 34 home runs in 115 games. And he tied with Takuya Nakamura Okawari-kun for the PL lead in home runs that year with 27. And he already has an MPB high 19 home runs. We played 50 plus games here, and that includes the grand slam shot he had on Friday at Koshien Stadium. He made it look like an oversized backyard. He did with Koshien Stadium, the way he whacked that ball to center field. I don't know if you got to see that home run.
I did see it. Yeah, it's kind of like a backyard if you got 45,000 close friends there for a barbecue.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd be close friends of mine if they were going to be in the backyard anyway playing wiffle ball or something. So, yeah. He made it look really small. I mean, it was an awesome home run, no doubter. And you know, his OPS is great. He's like I said, he's leading in home runs. He's also tied for the league lead, in which is the Japan lead in RBIs with 52, and then he's tied with Shohei Nakata of the Fighters. So he's having an MVP type season on offense right now. It's really great. And I love the tweet that our buddy Jason Koskrie sent out after me. He clubbed a couple home runs in a game against the Oryx last month, and he said, "Friends don't let friends pitch to Ernesto Mejia."
Yeah.
But Ernesto is a very friendly guy, as long as you're not an opposing pitcher. So let's hear what he had to say. All right, we're talking to Ernesto Mejia of the Lions. Thank you very much for taking the time, bud.
Thank you very much.
It's always good to see you. You look healthy. What did you do in the offseason to lose some weight and get lean?
Yeah, thank you. I worked really hard, you know. I never stopped working, doing a lot of running and a lot of core exercise, a lot of weight training and swings. And, you know, just trying, you know, because it was a dead season, you know. You don't want to just sit in the couch and wait until next season. So I kept working hard every day, you know, sometimes getting weekends off. But Monday to Friday, just working every day really hard and eating very healthy, you know, eating, trying to avoid bad stuff and get healthy stuff and a lot of protein, you know, and that helps me out a lot, definitely.
All right, now you also are having your best start to the season this year. Why is that?
Well, I think it's because that, you know, I came in a great shape. I never stopped working, like I say, and you know, it makes it easier. It makes it easier when you you just come to spring training ready to go. You know, you don't have to do the work in spring training to get ready. So if you're ready for the season, it makes it a little easier. So I guess that's what it was.
What about just being used to how the pitchers in Japan are trying to attack you and all that stuff? Because it just seemed like you were just a lot different guy than we've seen at the beginning of seasons.
Yeah, of course. I mean, facing these guys 2 years in a row, now this is my third year. Yeah, it gets me a little more confidence on what kind of stuff they have or how they want to pitch me. So yeah, experience is a big part of this too, of course.
All right, now, how are the Lions, in your opinion? You guys are about 5 games under 500. How would you assess the team now?
Well, lately we've been doing a lot better. You know, our pitching is doing really good, and we are winning more games. Yesterday was our first interleague game, and we lost. But I trust in my team. You know, I think we have a great team. If our pitching can hold the game a little, we can win a lot of games.
Now, when do you start to look at, you know, the standings and like how many games you guys are above 500, or when do you start to pay attention to that stuff?
Every day, you know, we always worry about it. I mean, we have to keep a day by day thing, you know, just knowing where we are individually and as a team too, of course, and we always talk about, you know, we want to win more games and get closer from the top, you know.
Every day, all right. All right, now, I know you don't worry about strikeouts, but this team led the league in strikeouts, I don't know, it's been like 2-3 years in a row. Is there something you guys can do to, like, try to avoid the strikeouts, or you're just not going to worry about it?
No, I mean, I don't worry about it. I'm a power hitter, you know. Power hitters strike out a lot. As long as I hit my home runs and get my RBIs and hit around 300, I'll be okay. I don't care if I strike out 200 times. And
okay. Now, this collision rule thing has brought a new dynamic to the game a little bit. Can you tell us, like, what kind of dynamic it is? Do you guys just try to be more aggressive on the base paths?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to get more on base, you know, and play more the fundamental stuff, you know, move the runner, bunt situation, you know, just executing everything and playing a good defense. And we've been doing that lately. When we win games, it's because we're playing great defense and we're doing the fundamental. So that's all that matters.
What about, like, let's just say, you know, if there even no outs or maybe just one out and there's a runner on second and there's a base hit, what's the strategy to try to get that guy home? Is he always going to try to score? Is he not going to worry about it? Are you going to worry about the arms in the outfield?
I mean, it depends who's running. Depends who's on the center field or outfielders, who they are. Depends how hard the ball is hit. You know, it's not about what we think. As long as our coaches, third base coaches, paying attention to everything and he think is the right thing, he's gonna do it. So we all are in with him. Like, yeah, we agree.
Okay. Now you got a new pitcher, Felipe
Paulino.
Paulino. Yeah. What can you tell us about him? Do you know him?
Yeah, I know him long time. He's a good pitcher. He got a really strong arm. He throw really hard and he have a lot of experience, including MLB experience. So yeah, I think he's gonna be a big part of this. He came here to help us. Talked to him yesterday. He's really happy. He's really glad to be here, and that's important, you know. That's what we want. We want someone to really want to be here.
All right, now Interleague just started. As you said, you guys lost the first game, but how do you view the CL teams, the Central League teams?
I mean, Dudley, pretty much all teams are kind of close from each other, so it's good to, you know, compete with teams that we don't see often. So we don't really see them very often, so that's nice, you know, that we can refresh our minds, you know, like start over for like a couple weeks and then come back to our league.
How do you like the format? You know, they switched it since last year, three games.
I like it. I like it. You know, we're not visit team that we visit last year, so it's nice. It's kind of nice. You know, it's different. But, I like it.
Now, what ballparks are you most interested in playing? And I know that the CL ballparks are much different from the Pacific League parks.
I don't know. Maybe Yaku Swallows. We didn't play there last year, so it's been 2 years since I got there. And other teams like Hiroshima Park, and I don't remember what other team, but in Japan, pretty much all parks are really nice, so I like it.
All right, last question now. It seems like the pitching and like scoring runs is gone up. We did check the numbers and the run scoring is going up. Would you attribute that to better hitting or just a difference in talent level on the pitching? Because it seems like a lot of young pitchers are coming up in the Pacific League and pitching this year.
No, I mean, I guess
he's back.
Yeah, I guess you know, I guess it's just part of the game now. We'll see at the end of the year what the numbers are like. Right now, you can have, you know, 40 homers, but if you don't hit one more homer in 3 months, you will end up with 40. So we don't know yet. So what I can say is that the league is in the is a good level, and it's a lot of young talent. Guys are competing now, trying to get their spot, and that's good, you know. And a lot of those guys are really good.
All right, man. We appreciate it. Stay healthy, and good luck.
No, thank you, man.
All right.
Hey, thanks a lot, buddy. That was great.
Yeah, that was good. I know he cares. He still doesn't care anything about those strikeouts, and you have to respect that. But what struck you?
Well, okay.
Oh, that comment did.
Yeah, I thought you were gonna. What struck me out? I guess we can call him Good Scout Mejia.
Good Scout Mejia.
Since his new motto is "Be prepared, baby."
Be very prepared.
Indeed. So, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit about how a big issue for him the first year was getting used to the. You know, when he hit, there were three balls, getting used to not seeing fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting used to occasionally watching him throw a fastball when you were looking breaking pitch all the way. You know, and the second year was more of the same. It was still part of the transition. I think he's really, really tuned into that now. And I thought it was interesting, I guess, that he's so comfortable now with, you know, when he said, what have you learned? What kind of stuff the opposing pitchers have? You know, he's really comfortable. This guy has this. He's going to throw me this. So I thought that was, I guess, the most interesting thing. I think the talk about the off season. He and I, you know, it's funny because we've had a number of chats this year, but it's often been kind of, well, first of all, as I said in a previous episode, it was a chat not about his home runs. the day he hit his first one, it was a chat. We had a chat which was specifically not about his home runs because I didn't want to bring it up.
Didn't want to bring it up.
No. And then after the game, he said, "Just like I told you about my, just like we were talking about my home runs." Okay. So anyway, it was sort of the elephant in the room. You know, he was hitting 350 something, but the, you know, Japanese managers will often say, you know, he's hitting home runs, but he's not hitting for average. I mean, how many times have we heard that about every foreign player?
Right.
But in this case, Norio Tanabe was saying, well, you know, he's kind of hitting like 359, but we haven't seen a home run yet. like, come on, guy.
We haven't seen a home run yet.
So that was kind of interesting. So getting out of the way, and I guess the other thing was, what I wanted to ask him was, how did he feel when the Lions didn't offer him a new contract, and then went to re-sign him? We haven't spoken about this, and I haven't asked their international director, Mr. Iwata, about this. And I haven't asked him about it. It's just like there's always something else to talk about. So I'm really curious. But obviously he said he was motivated after his first season in a kind of a different way, not in a fitness way, but in a sort of, I don't know, invigorated about baseball again.
Right.
But this year he was invigorated about fitness.
Right. Yeah, and you could tell he has lost weight. I can't remember, and I think we talked about it before, how mm-hmm. much he had lost, but you can tell he's a lot more fit, a lot leaner, and you know, he's moving well. But I guess yep. the thing that struck me was the thing about, I mean, he said a lot with this one little statement, if our pitching can hold the games a little, we can win. And I thought, well, yeah, but what are we really saying here? I mean, you know, the defense and the pitching work together, and I was out there talked to a couple of reporters. One was our beat reporter who covers the team every day, and another guy I made friends with last year who just covers the Lions exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was talking to them about the problems and the defense, and we'll get to it in a little while, but mm-hmm. the defense was one of the things they pointed to, and he said that they were playing great defense, and I'm thinking, well, no, I don't see that, but if you can help the pitchers get off the field, certainly that's going to help. And if you can get a lot more production with those home runs, that's going to help because the team's hitting a lot of home runs. And the pitching needs the defense. They go hand in hand. And I remember seeing somebody, I think it was on Twitter, saying, yeah, you know, basically they said they looked at the fielding independent mm-hmm. pitching and said that the defense saved the pitchers last year. And I'm like, well, no, I'm sure that didn't happen. I just think they made the routine plays, and there were a lot of balls that were hit at guys that they were able to field, but they certainly didn't help. And they're not helping this year either. And you know, I thought that was a big comment for him to say. And then I wasn't surprised that he actually knew Felipe Paulino, but I mm-hmm. guess just because they're from the same country, because I asked him if they played on the national team or anything together, and he said no. But
which is interesting. I'll tell you, it's interesting because everywhere else he's listed as being from the Dominican Republic. The only place I saw he was from Venezuela was on the Lions announcement.
Really?
Yeah. And but Kyoto News, which published theirs, is very careful. And I say that because we had an official press release from the Cuban government in which their national team PR guy got the guy's birth date, got his age wrong. And mm-hmm. Kyoto was checked it and said, no, his age is wrong. But Kyoto had it as Venezuela. The Lions had it as Venezuela. But Baseball Reference and several other places had it as Dominican Republic. So interesting.
So, and then, you know, we also talked about the fact that the scoring is up and all that stuff, mm-hmm. and he attributed to a lot of young talent in the league, and I think that's basically acknowledging that there's a little bit of watered-down pitching in the PL, and just like a slugger would, he turned the whole conversation to home runs.
That's his job, man.
Yeah, I know. If you hit 40 home runs and you don't hit any more, then you finish with 40 home runs, and I'm like, yeah. Yeah, for goodness sakes, that's what happens.
Yep.
But you can contribute to, you know, victories defensively, and mm-hmm. you can hit behind runners,
mm-hmm.
and you can stop striking out a lot, and you can, you know, challenge the bad arms in the outfield or the weak arms in the outfield when you're running.
Mm-hmm.
And even though you finish with 40 home runs, you've helped the team win.
Mm.
So I don't think it's all about the home runs, even if you're a power hitter.
Right. Yeah, that reminds me of a story once about somebody who was like trying to teach their fat child about mathematics, and they're saying, "Why are you always thinking about food? You know, we're going to talk about mathematics." So, they'll give you a simple math problem, and it ended up saying like, "If you have 5 donuts, you take away 3." So if you're a home run hitter, it's like everything is about home runs, you know?
Ernesto
started June with 13 home runs, and he hit 6. How did his season go? 21. Yeah,
he didn't hit enough home runs.
Exactly. So, yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, I was thinking a bit about that, and what I guess the interesting ones, I don't care about strikeouts if I hit 300 with lots of home runs.
Right.
Okay, so 299, we know, then the strikeouts matter. 300, no way.
Yeah, so, it's an interesting talk. He's an interesting guy, and, I really like, especially, you can hear it come through in the interview. And before, when I first talked to him for the show, we snuck back behind the dugout into the mirror room, and he spoke to me for, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes, and we had to cut it short because they were just about to play the game.
Oh, okay.
So that's the kind of guy he is. He's really nice, really accommodating, and he was again this time, and I'm sure he was with you as well.
Oh, always, yeah. He's always friendly.
So let's go ahead and talk about the Lions now. Geez, they're last in steals. So they lead the Pacific League in strikeouts. They're second in Japan behind the Hanshin Tigers in strikeouts. And this is a bad thing, people. They hit into a bunch of double plays. They've got some issues. So I talked to the Yomiuri beat writer, and he says, it's pitching and defense. Those are the problems. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, we see that. What are they going to do about it? And he says, well, there's not much they can do. They keep shifting guys in and out of that shortstop hole. They keep moving Yuji Kaneko all around the place because he's not good enough really to play any position in particular. And, we talked about the fact that Kaneko can't take over the shortstop role. For some reason, they keep trying to give it to him, and he keeps giving it back.
Keeps dropping it.
Well, he's throwing it back at him.
Yeah, pretty much. And they've got this thing. The Lions have last year they had a first base right field, which is not such an unusual combination with Ryota Wakia. But this year it's a right field shortstop combination.
Yeah.
They get Tonozaki. Sometimes he plays. I think he's played shortstop.
He has.
Yeah, so I was going to say Tonozaki is a right fielder shortstop, and I've seen, they do all kinds of weird stuff. I mean, that's, I guess, what having Mr. Hashigami, their head coach and tactical coach, is a smart guy, and, sometimes smart guys get carried away.
Yeah, the other guy, my other reporter friend said that he called it the shortstop of the day because when you go to the park, you just don't know who's going to be playing short that day.
That's not good because you really need to know, for the infielders, that the communication is really key.
I think so.
In maximizing it, I think usually when you see guys play together a lot, they tend to get better in terms of, they become more efficient. And I wouldn't say they get better. I mean, as they get older, they lose range and they lose this and they lose that and small bits of body parts and so on. But what they do is they gain efficiency.
We hope, but the efficiency in the rotation is a problem too. Now you say Kikuchi seems to have found something. He's throwing off speed stuff with some really good arm action and he's keeping guys off balance and he's got a 22 inning scoreless streak. And that's really good. Cause I'm really not high on him, and Takayuki Kishi, the ace, is set to return from injury, and Kona Takahashi is solidifying the rotation or his rotation spot of late and looks really good. And I remember when he was drafted in 2014 and I said he was a really good pick for Cebu, even though I mistakenly said he was left-handed and not right-handed. But
that's where I got that from. Yeah, from you.
From me, yes, yes.
It's because the other Takahashi's a lefty. I think that's imprinted on my brain.
Tomomi, yeah, the closer from the before time. But they've had they've got other problems. They've been starting some young guys. The guy with the really stately name, Shinsaburo Tawata, he throws from this really low angle. He didn't pitch well. Well, he's just not pitched well. He hasn't pitched consistently, and he hasn't really seemed to have a consistent release point. So that's probably part of his problem. And They've just got so many issues in so many places. But I thought the biggest thing was the fact that Tetsuya Shiozaki is sitting on the bench. He's doing stuff. And I asked both of these reporters about him and the rumors about him taking over as manager next year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the Yomiuri guys said, well, yeah, it's just a rumor. We don't know that it's true. And the other reporter said, though, yes, they've been holding him back, and he's been saying, I want to be the manager, I want to be the manager, and they keep holding him back. So I probably either needed to go to another source or just believe the Yomiuri reporter. But I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, that he probably is wanting to be the man in charge. And obviously, if they're going to play fourth place baseball and finish in that slot, that Tanabe too doesn't have a chance of coming back for another year in charge. But if they somehow make a run and maybe get to second place, I don't think there's any way with the talent level that they can get to first place, but if they can get to second place and have a good run in the playoffs, meaning win that first round in the climax and go to the second round and make the Hawks sweat, perhaps he can keep his job. I don't know, but I think the truth is somewhere in the middle there.
Interesting. I like Shiozaki personally. I think he's very frank. Liked him as a pitcher. I know Nabe Q loves him, which is probably part of that dynamic. It's kind of reminds me of the Swallows situation a few years ago, where basically Shigeru Takeda was the manager, and then they had a pitching coach, Daisuke Araki, who was scheduled to be the next manager.
Right.
And they wanted Araki to be the manager, but they didn't want him to be the interim manager. So they just, you know, they made, the plan was apparently to make a Mr. Ogawa the interim manager, you know, and let him fail. And then bring in Araki. The problem was they just won. Right. They had a good team. They had quite a good team. That Takeda really wasn't using, because his mandate was to build up the pitching and defense, and he didn't want people who weren't playing defense, and so he had a lot of good hitters. He had a good team. He had Kazuhiro Hatakeyama, who he wouldn't use because he didn't like his defense. He had a couple of players he wouldn't use because he didn't like his defense. So, and he basically, everybody over 35 was told to go to Tota and Saitama Prefecture and check out the Eastern League.
Check it out, huh?
Yeah, it's just like, once stay you have a look. There. Right, yeah, stay there, because get a good look, because you're going to see a lot of it until you get younger.
Hashtag high.
So that didn't work, and eventually the team sort of lost all faith. You know, he lost faith in the guys who weren't getting it done because they weren't young enough and weren't agile enough, and the team lost faith in him. And then they brought in a new guy and says, well, you know, we got a pretty good team here. Let's just use them.
Right.
And and so the problem was, they won, and Araki was sitting there twiddling his thumbs waiting to be the next manager, and that chance never came. So it could be that way here, in the sense that, yes, there is a faction, obviously Watanabe has said repeatedly he wants Shiozaki to be the manager, and I do believe Shiozaki does want to be the manager. We spoke sort of on a tangent about that. So I don't know what that relationship is with this season. I think he's a head coach. He's the head coach and pitching coach. He's the other head coach. Mm-hmm. And he does have a lot of input into the pitching decisions. I think there are a number of issues with Seibu. They're an old timey organization. You know, they believe in doing things the way they were done 20 years ago.
Yeah.
They don't want to change.
I just totally felt a strange dynamic around the whole team with this managerial situation going on, and the pitching situation being very unsteady. And here they are hitting all these home runs, but they're not scoring that many more runs than anyone else, and they're not winning enough games, and that just breeds more consternation within the.
I was gonna say no. I think you're clutching at straws a little bit, as one, you know, I think this is natural looking at the Lions. You go, what the heck's going on here? I'm not certain you have your finger on the butt, you know, you found the answer, but it's a mystery team to some degree, because they're fairly talented group, but they seem disorganized.
Yeah.
And they seem more disorganized than they have a right to be.
Yeah.
Because they're not Oryx.
No, they're not. But they're playing at about the same clip, unfortunately.
That's almost, you could almost be sued for saying that, so you better be careful.
Well, look, Orcs has 22 wins and Sabre has 26. That's not very far away.
No, but yeah.
Yeah, no, but yeah, but no, but yeah. No. But no. So, anyway, there was one question I forgot to ask Ernesto, so I'll ask you. And because I had seen that there was a trend with the Lions that they've had a breakout player in recent years, a guy break out offensively. And 3 years ago, it was Hideto Asamura.
Right.
And then last year was Shogo Akiyama. And this year, I thought, okay, who's it going to be? And of course, you and I loved Tomoya Mori when he came up, and we thought he was going to be great. His production has been a little bit stagnant. Is there anybody else you know on that team who could be a breakout hitter?
Well, that's
let's say the second half of this year.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it looked like they had three of them this year.
Mm.
You know, well, Tomoya Mori, I think they've given up on Sakata again.
Well, that's what they do. They put him out there. He gets injured or gets injured, and then he's gone, and then they'll bring him back up
injury.
When he tears it up on the farm, and then same cycle. So it's a cycle.
And I think the bit, you know, I don't want to be critical. I'm glad Mori was aspired to resume his catching career.
Mm-hmm. But
to be honest, I guess they've had a sort of a hit heart to heart with him and say, look, you can play the outfield. Let's not push it.
Yeah.
He's physically gifted. I think he has good reflexes. I think he does have a good arm. I think right field's a great spot for him. I mean, we talked about combinations, and Japan is a, you know, combinations of positions where players move from one to the other. You know, in Japan, and I said shortstop and right field is an unusual one, but right field is right field is like a hall of mirrors for Cebu. you look and you, wait, is that the same guy who was there 30 seconds ago or is he different? He's got
right.
a similar name, but wait, he's throwing left-handed.
Right. You know, so, where I'd like to see him in a couple years is left field. He could be the next Kazuhiro Wada. Guy
he certainly
used to be
could
a catcher and he goes from catcher to being a really good left fielder and hits.
I think, given his age and his wheels are still pretty good. He's still young. I think play him in right. I think with Watt it was not a case of maybe he had a long release, but if you have a long release you want him, or maybe it was a quick release. Let's forget that. But he had a good arm. And Mori does have a good arm, and I admire his ambition. But the Lions got to say, look, son, you ain't gonna crack the lineup, so let's just give it a rest.
All right, let's make a four seam transition and talk about interleague play. Now, I have a correction from last week. I was looking at that Baseball King site, and it was there was the information from 2015. So the Hawks have won interleague five times.
Correct.
And the Stars have finished last five times.
Oh.
And the Carps' big skid was in 2014. So I apologize for that. So yeah, the Central League on the second night won four games, and I thought, oh wow, and that might be the only time that happens. But I hope to see more. They're hanging tough. I think it's 18-17-1 right now in favor of the Pacific League after Sunday's games.
Mm.
How about those Giants, though? What an impressive start for them in Central League. They looked like they were dead. They had a seven-game skid, and then they come back with a six-game winning streak, and they win their first five in interleague play.
I think they're on a little high right now because they got, you know, Abe returned to the lineup and hits a couple of home runs, and they feel like the Giants again. And I think the other thing, Tetsuya Utsumi comes up and he has a big game.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, he is the out of nowhere guy, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. He is really a good guy. So, y'all, I'm not a Giants fan, but I do like Utsumi, and so I like, you know, that he does well, and he's a great quote. You know, I'm a reporter, so I like guys who have a good, you know, flair for language, and he does, so he's fun.
Okay, and then I also liked the Bay Stars as they were heading into interleague play. Now, they had their struggles at times, and they're doing okay. Not great, not bad. But they took 2 out of 3 from the Marines,
mm-hmm.
who are my pick to win interleague session and are 2-4, but we won't mention that.
Nope.
And
nope, and you're safe.
They got shut out by Shun Yamaguchi today. There was gray matter on the field. They got their brains beaten out a little bit. But, hey, we're not going to mention that. Didn't I say that?
Didn't happen.
Okay. So
You didn't hear it here first.
Or last. That's
right.
Talk about it.
That's right.
But, the Bay Stars looked good these past two games. Of course, I liked the statement that you made on the show last year, and I tried to pay attention, last week, and I did see a lot more home runs by CL teams in their home parks. Mm-hmm. They did seem to pitch. I don't know if it was the pitchers who were pitching them differently because they're playing in these different parks, or just more fastballs. I don't know what it was, but I did see a lot more Central League home runs, like you said, in the Central League park.
I haven't really checked that, to be honest, but that is what I noticed, that the PL team, you know, it's like everywhere you look, the PL teams were better than the Central League teams. They were better hitters. They were better pitchers. You know, if you were a CL team, you had more trouble with the PL teams. If you were a the CL pitchers have more trouble with the PL, the CL pitchers at home,
right,
have more trouble with the PL hitters than the CL hitters. For every group except the CL pitchers at home, except the CL hitters at home, who tend to do better. They tend to do better against the PL, I think the PL pitchers who aren't used to pitching in these really home run friendly parks.
Right.
And that was the one area. I did look the other day and, you know, I looked, you know, how do the teams, you know, if you strip away the DHs.
Right.
And you strip away the pitchers, the PL lineups are just better.
Right.
The DHs are better. You know, without the DHs, the rest of the guys are better. With the DHs, the DHs are better. The Central League pitchers, not surprisingly, are a little better than the Pacific League pitchers. But it's, as I've said before, the difference between a quote-unquote good hitting pitcher, you know, somebody who hits like 150,
uh-huh.
with, you know, if you were a regular, it'd strike out 300 times. and a bad hitting pitcher, a guy who hits 090 and strike out 400 times, is pretty minuscule. So that difference is not huge. So anyway.
Now, one of the things I always notice about interleague is they bring up guys from the farm to get starts, either their spot starts or they're just trying to bring something different in. I've noticed that through the years, but what I seem to be seeing this year is a lot of young guys getting starts. And I shot this question over to Michael Westbay earlier this evening, and he had time to get back to me on it. And I said, can you look up the number of guys, just in general, who have made their debuts, the pitchers who have made their debuts so far this year in 2016? And he said he counted 50. And last year, for the whole season, there were 58.
Wow.
So we're seeing a lot of young talent get, you know, chance. I think the guy with the can't miss all-star name, Shinnosuke Ogasawara for the Chunichi Dragons, got a start against the Hawks, and he actually didn't pitch that poorly. I think he gave up one hit in his five innings, but he walked a whole bunch of guys. He walked a family of five or more, and he ended up
table this way.
Right, yeah, not party, a family, but yeah. So I see all these young guys getting a chance to play, and I don't know, you know, I heard someone say a long time ago that they don't care about these games. They're just throwing them away. They don't really think that they mean anything.
Those days are gone, man.
And I don't think that any team in the Central League has any time to take a day off and say, well, you know, we're probably not going to win this game today. Let's just let the rookie throw. I don't think that's happening.
Well, I think, you know, that happened. You know, that happened the first year of Interleague. And you can see, and there's always a great story about one of the reasons the Dragons, Chunichi Dragons, fired Hiramitsu Ochiai was that he disparaged...
Wait. Fired him? I thought they promoted him.
No, they fired him. And then they promoted him.
You're fired. Come up here with us.
Exactly. We don't want to make you look bad. We don't want to make it look like we fired your butt. No, they fired him. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, and then they said, we're sorry, you know, we were so proud of him because he was one of the more successful managers in history, which is kind of like saying that Ichiro Suzuki is kind of one of the better slap hitters, base runners and outfielders in NPB history. He could be up there in the list somewhere. So they got rid of Ochai ostensibly because their attendance was going down and he didn't want nothing to do with fan service.
Right.
And he would tell the players, fan service is not your business. And the team was going, no, you can't say that, because they were not doing it. And the first year of Interleague, Ochai basically came out and said, I don't care about Interleague. It's not important. So right. All the players went, oh, good, vacation time. And the Dragons stank.
Yeah. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the phrase fan service, that's what they use here in Japan for fan friendly activities, relations,
PR stuff, basically
PR stuff. Yeah.
So yeah, the Interleague has been kind of interesting. I hadn't noticed about the new players coming up. You see players drag. I think they drag players out of the woodwork a little bit. We saw Chen Kuan Yu start yesterday for the Marines and he hadn't been pitching and, which of course start him against a team that doesn't know him, like Yokohama, where he played for 4 years or something,
or in that stadium a team that has been hitting pretty well.
Yeah, and his manager was his minor league teammate for a year and a half, right?
I think the odds were all stacked against him yesterday on Saturday.
So yeah, it's kind of interesting, but I do love the Interleague because it's so different, and we get to see some interesting things.
Okay. All right, making a two-seam transition, baseball and softball were basically this past week approved for recommendation for inclusion at the 2020 Tokyo Games.
Yep.
Along with a few other sports. So I'm not surprised. We all expected this. Mm-hmm. You said it's going to boost popularity of the Olympic Games itself here in Tokyo, but I'm wondering what it's going to do for baseball in the long term. And you know, I've been thinking about it, and I know that we have the Premier 12 and we have the World Baseball Classic, and that's probably enough for world-class competition, but it won't grow the sport in other countries.
Well, I think those are, but, well, those are sort of like two different competitions. And I think the Olympics has the extra appeal of you know, being in a competition that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And Premier 12 is out there on a limb because...
Yeah, who knows that?
Exactly. And the World Baseball Classic suffers from the fact that it's run by MLB. You know, Jim Small, I'm sorry, but I don't know if it suffers because of it, but it benefits from having MLB players. But it also is run for MLB to a large degree. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole... That, I think is another side of that. Now, I'll tell you, MLB does a great job compared to the World Baseball Softball Confederation. They're much better at organizing anything. But the Olympics are hard. MLB doesn't really care. They're like, you mean we have to finish in the top six in the Premier 12 to qualify for the Olympics? Okay, who can we send that doesn't matter? You know, they're not going to care about it in the Premier 12. They're not going to care about it in the Olympics. They could easily find a solution and allow major leaguers to go. There's 100 solutions they could find if they wanted to spend 30 seconds looking for a solution. But since they don't think anything's going to make them a lot of money, 30 seconds, that's a lot of time to waste on that Olympic thing.
Right.
30 seconds, are you kidding me?
So, yeah, I
let's watch reruns of I Love Lucy instead.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that it's needed in the Olympics, but, you know, here we are with the opportunity to see it there. It could be this very big self-serving exercise where, you know, baseball says, look at us, we're a great sport, come watch us, and then nobody does the next time. So we'll see how, you know, after the 2020 games, how it goes with the sport, and if other countries pick it up. There's no way they can qualify, right?
Well, basically, it's the Premier 12, which is good because the Premier 12, basically, the Olympic qualifying used to be a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had a different system. You know, the Olympic champions were not in it 1 year because the only game they lost was a 1-0 12-inning shutout or something. You know, pitcher had a fluke game and that was the end of the road. So it could be a really good tournament. It could be a great boost for baseball, or it might not be. But my thinking is, it's not going to hurt if it isn't.
Okay.
So it could be a great thing and it might just be a fizz. But if it's a fizz, that's okay. It'll be fun.
Okay. All right, a couple of notes. Shohei Ohtani, my favorite player. Stop it, Patrick Newman.
What, are you guys vying for Mr. Ohtani's attention?
Look,
or is it me? I don't know. Or is it me? I post a fair amount about him, too. So
I could get his attention anytime I want
to. Oh, wow. Can we turn down the volume all of a sudden?
I'm not vying for attention.
Jen's getting heated up over here.
All right. All right, so on Sunday against the Giants at Tokyo Dome, he fired a pitch that was 163 kilometers per hour, which is, I guess, 101?
It is. Over 101?
Over 100. Maybe not quite 101. And he
No, it was. Oh, it's 101.2, I think.
It's 101.2, okay. And he fired that against with Luis Cruz,
mm-hmm,
of the Giants in the batter's box, and he fouled it back, and that was the fastest pitch in Japanese baseball regular season history.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fighters won the game 6-2. Ohtani threw a complete game. He was awesome today. He also had a hit to extend his hitting streak to 15 games, and
yep,
he knocked in a run with a sacrifice fly that I think he thought was out.
Yep,
and
it was.
He got me because of the way he reacted. I said, oh, well, maybe he got it. And it was a fly ball. It was a liner, kind of a high line drive.
It pretty well hit it to the edge of the warning track, and it looked like it was gone. He got it off the end of the bat a little bit, and it was a fat pitch that he missed.
Yeah.
And he's thinking... Yeah, and they're giving him high fives when he goes back to the dugout, you know, he's shaking his head like, man, don't even talk to me.
Yeah,
and he's got a little smile like, I hear you, thank you for the support, but just be quiet.
Yeah, he had this wry smile like, you know, what are you doing? I missed it.
He had grand slam lined up and I missed it. I had an interesting chat today with Scott Matheson. Now we all love Scott because he's very forthcoming,
outspoken.
He is outspoken, and he's a good guy, and he doesn't take anything personally. Anyway, so we had a loud disagreement about Mr. Ohtani. He said basically he doesn't know how to pitch. He's wasting his time hitting when he needs to learn how to pitch,
mm-hmm,
and he is never going to be he isn't a good enough hitter that he'd ever be as good a hitter as Sakamoto or Abe.
Hmm.
Hmm. Chris Martin sort of mentioned that to Chris Martin, and Chris Martin's also a great guy, and he said, look, he has...
The pitcher for the Fighters.
The pitcher, his teammate for the Fighters. Look, I watch him bat, and I see that he has a lot of trouble with the inside strikes, discerning, judging whether they're balls or strikes. And so basically everybody now is pitching him tight inside. But of course, Japanese pitchers being what they are, they'll throw four pitches inside and then hang one on the over the plate as they did today.
Right.
So it's just, you know, and I understand what Scott's saying I will try to interpret what Scott's saying. So for people like me who are stats oriented and saying, wow, he's done all this great stuff, is that, while he's done great stuff, he doesn't see the ability to make the adjustments at another level.
Mm.
Whereas he does see that ability because he throws hard and he throws a good splitter and he has a good curveball and he has a changeup. Okay. So the other thing I heard about Ohtani today, and the last thing I'm going to say, is that apparently he's still bothered he's had problems with blisters all year, and it was supposedly to have gone away. But it hasn't. But it's funny. It's like his fingers must get numb because after about the fourth or fifth inning, he just locks in. If he stays in the game, if he gets a lead and he can stay in the game past the fifth inning, you know, just watch out. Just go away. just say, what time's the team bus? Tell him to come an hour earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, he was good in the second half of the game today until the ninth inning, but that's another story. But even then, he was still throwing hard. Velocity was up, and he got the game done. I don't know that I would have forced him out there for the ninth inning, but that's
my... I don't think forced him out here. It's they let him pitch. It's like, you want to go? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Don't ever give
goldfish eat themselves to death too.
I know.
Okay?
Don't ever give Japanese players guns with bullets in them because the manager says you want to shoot yourself in the head. Sure, I'll do that, Skip.
All right, on to the Eagles. The Rakuten Eagles put Tomohiro Annaku in the bullpen this past week. Thank you. I think they listened to the show and they heard me. And he looks good there. I mean, he's not great. It's going to take an adjustment for him. I don't think he's going to be good with runners on base and all that stuff. Everything that relievers have to get used to, I think he's going to have to get used to. But you know, he didn't give up any runs, and that's step one, baby, for that bullpen. Just acknowledge that there's a problem, and that's the other problem. So they did that, and they also brought up Louis Okoye to the first team since they were about 15 games under 500 at the time, and I was thinking they might as well let him get used to being up with the big boys and putting on the big pants with the big shoes and facing the big pitchers, because he's not going to learn that much on the farm. And they could actually use his speed and his defense and his amazing arm. So let him play. And, you know, he doesn't have to be an everyday guy and he doesn't have to start every night. And I think they get him that experience this year. I think he's going to be a very productive player next year.
We're going to get into this subject much more deeply next week about, what's involved in, your lineup selection and, how much are you managing for today and how much are you managing for the season and how much are you managing for the next five seasons?
Oh, really? Are you going to do the show notes?
No, but we're going to go there. See,
if you already know what's going to be on the show, you do the show notes.
I'm having a premonition.
Well, let's see if we can get you some medication for that. In the meantime, let's go to fielding questions.
Wow.
Premonition.
Wow, I have a vision, and the rest of the world wears bifocals.
Okay. All right, this question is from Joseph at JT Dutch, and it's via NPB Reddit, who was chiding me this past week for not answering the question. I'm like, dude, we got it. There's a line. Sometimes there's a line.
That's right.
He asks, I wonder if it's standard custom for teams to pay managers fines in Japan as it is here, and I'm assuming he's in the United States. Asking this question, Mr. JT Dutch. You want to take this one first?
I don't really. I've heard teams, they will do it when they think it's unjust.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not certain whether it's standard practice or not. Now, it didn't used to be that the fines were anything. I mean, they used, famously, Osamu Higashio and Kyosuke Sasaki basically wrestled an umpire to the ground and took turns beating him up after a call they didn't like in the middle of the infield. And they were each, I believe, fined $200. it was like, yeah, well, why not? Why not beat up the umpire? So, those days have changed. Now those fines are several thousands of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars. So now they'll hurt. And I think we have the managers are much better behaved. I think the umpires are, the umpires are still umpires.
Yes, they are. I don't think anyone is really privy to that information, but I do recall a foreign manager telling me a few years back that he expected his fine to be paid by the team, and it wasn't. Now, I'm not going to say who the manager was. I don't think I'm at liberty. I don't think we are at liberty.
I don't think you need to say who the manager was.
I don't think you need to talk about it anymore. Okay. Anyway, we're not at liberty to divulge that information, but somebody will probably be able to figure it out other than my partner here. Based on that, I would say heck no, but it probably depends, just like what Jim said, it probably depends on the offense, and it probably depends on the club. I remember Hiro Mitsuoji getting ejected because he would take his team off the field sometimes when he didn't like what the umpires called, or he'd argue more than 5 minutes, and you'd get the automatic ejection and the fine that comes with it. What is the automatic ejection after 5 minutes, is it?
Yeah.
Of arguing a call and delay of game and all that stuff, and the team will probably pay that fine. But if you do bump an umpire or wrestle him to the ground, alligator style, or engage in other behavior that's unbecoming of a manager or that embarrasses the team, perhaps, you know, they give you a shovel so you can dig into your own pocket and pay for it. I don't know.
Well, as a Hiroshima, they give you a pen so you can draw a t-shirt and they can sell it. Although, actually, those t-shirts were not sold. Those t-shirts I'm referring to were not sold.
And this was for Marty Brown, I believe,
this was
right?
Marty Brown.
My manager throws bases.
And then,
I remember that.
And then he had a separate one, which was watch out, I throw bases. Or something that we'll have to ask Marty next time we talk to him.
Okay. All right. And the next question is from Mike in Washington, D.C. And it's an MP3.
I know Jim is a big fan of sabermetrics, and a lot of those stats have become pretty common parlance for American baseball fans of the MLB. But how much do Japanese fans and how much do Japanese teams use advanced metrics? Which teams use them the most? Are they ever discussed in the press or amongst fan groups? I'd love to know sort of what the analytical revolution sounds like over in Japan. Thanks.
Wow, thank you, Mike.
All right, so sabermetrics. I'll go first on this one. I think they're highly used in NPB, and again, I always refer to players who have shown me the data. And the most glaring example of that I had was Alonzo Powell, but I also remember Bobby Valentine and his man Paul Pupo, who was the stat guy who used to go deeper into the analytics. And I think a lot of the teams use them and use them immensely. But I don't think they build their whole team around it, and Jim probably knows a little bit better. There are probably guys who are against using that specifically or exclusively, and there are guys who probably rely on it a lot more. But I think there are a lot of sites out there. I've seen sites. I know Michael Westbay is in a group of sabermetricians, and they meet regularly. I don't remember how often it was.
Well, he belongs to Saber, yeah. The Society of American Baseball Research.
Okay.
Which the word sabermetrics comes from.
Okay. I don't think we know how much they're using it, but I know they're using it. And do reporters bring it up? Do we see a lot of the term like whip in the mainstream media? Actually, we don't see that much, and we don't see
a little bit.
Once in a while, you'll see OPS being used, but yeah, I mean, once in a while, but not a lot.
I'm surprised,
not like the States.
I'm surprised how much currency WHIP has gotten, because as far as I know, that was it was a fantasy stat. You know, if you had a fantasy baseball team, you got points for WHIP, and nobody knew what a WHIP was other than those people, and that's got pretty common currency now.
Right.
One more thing.
My best story about that is about, I don't know if it's sabermetrics or not, but is when Tadahito Iguchi came back from the States playing over there, and he joined the Lotte Marines, and we sat down for an interview right off the bat, in 2009, and he said, yeah, well, you know, in the States, the teams, they're just pretty loose with the preparation. And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, they don't go through all the numbers like we do here in Japan.
Yep.
And so that was his experience over there.
They have their Japanese teams are obsessed with numbers. They're not really obsessed with knowledge.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? They love their information. They love to pump out reams of numbers, but And players, you know, this is the thing. The players, part of the thing of Interleague is that the players are used to preparing, you know, basically the coaches go through it and they'll say, you know, look for this, look for that. Okay, fine. Well, it sometimes, it's a long story. I'm not going to go into it, but Trey Hillman told me, you know, he was shocked at how difficult Interleague was for his guys. They were just sitting there deer in the headlights the first year.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen these guys before. You know, what are we going to do? So 2006, you know, he planned for Interleague and they won the pennant. I'm not saying those two things are necessarily related, but it helped take away one obstacle is the preparation. Mm-hmm. So that they're huge on preparation with numbers. Now, how far the sabermetrics goes, I would say I've talked to enough international department guys to say the teams usually have somebody in the international and scouting department who knows quite a bit about sabermetrics, how influential they are, is up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a team building side, yes. But how good they are, that's another question. I know the Hawks are have always been interested in building a big sabermetrics, utility, you know, tools. Whether they actually ever have or not is another question. I know that I had a very lucky chance. I spoke to Hiroshi Yoshimura, who's the general manager of the Nippon Ham Fighters today.
Right.
And he was, I'll give him a plug, shout out. He was one of my very first readers when I was publishing a sabermetric guide to Japanese baseball 22 years ago.
Mm.
And he said, yes, I have all my opinions. He said, okay, how much are they using? I'll address that answer first. He said, right now they are developing a projection system so they can look at what guys do in the minor leagues and project what they can do in the majors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is something I'm working on as well. I said, yeah, that's really great. And I said, it sounded at first like it was done, but no, it's in the developmental stage, which is another question. He says, yes, they're always looking at minor leaguers because they're keen on keeping to their budget. Now I said, how much does it inform the on the field decisions? And the answer is as much or as little as the manager wants it to.
Mm.
Now the Fighters have a really interesting relationship with their managers, which is they have very clearly defined roles.
Uh-huh.
The manager does not have control over the roster. The manager does not have control over trades. The manager does not have control over draft picks. What the manager does is take the players they give him, you know, and go with the team. So, but they also don't have any influence into the kind of tactics. Hence, the Fighters are bunt crazy. So perhaps the most sabermetrically oriented team in Japan is the one that loves sacrifice bunts the most.
Yeah.
So,
and again, you can twist the numbers and make them tell you just about anything you want. So they're sacrificing all that much, and are they scoring more? Probably not.
No, the answer is no. Because
but that doesn't stop them from sacrificing.
It doesn't stop them from sacrificing, and basically, anytime you see a number that's weird, you can say small sample size. But anyway, there'll be some more reporting on that one. So the answer is the teams use quite a bit of sabermetrics. I know there are teams that are using also PitchFX because they have the stuff installed in their home parks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But again, how much that goes into the team, you know, it's how much that is just a toy and how much is that a practical tool is anybody's guess.
Right, right. All right. Thank you very much for the questions, guys.
Yes.
Anyone else with a question, send them by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat@JBWPodcast. Or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a message there. Look for us on iTunes. Enjoy your baseball.
Talk to you next week.